Sometimes in life, people shoot for their dreams, literally. Eric Suvana grew up in Saginaw, Texas, the town known for hosting one of the largest Lanier celebrations in America. Eric is putting this tight-knit community on the map again, this time for precision rifle shooting. From building his own ammunition to traveling the country for competition, Eric is taking a shot at a dream. After competing for 4 years, he's won regional matches, placed as high as sixth in national events, and earned pro status in the Precision Rifle Series. In this episode, Eric will take us on a journey through the world of precision shooting, tell us about his hunting adventures, and give us a taste of his food truck, the Saucy Hibachi. So, Eric, I'm John Messina, and then this is Co. We both run the Lao American Sports Hall of Fame, and Co had the idea to start this podcast. I don't know if you know him. He's a former professional bodybuilder. So we've been interviewing a lot of athletes, so we're excited to have you on tonight and hear all about what you're doing. So we'll go ahead, jump right into it. Co is going to kick us off here, and we'll get started.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of C4 Podcast, C4 Southeast Asian Athlete Achievement Through Adversity, where we focus on the stories of amazing athletes that have made huge strides, with their accomplishments. My name is Coach Andetka. I'm here with my co-host, John Messina. If you guys haven't already, please like, share our page C4 Podcast on Facebook, Lao American Sports. On IG and Facebook. Today we have an amazing guest, and I am going to let my co-host John introduce him.
Yeah, welcome everybody to another episode. Before we get into this interview with Ark today, wanted to do something really quick and give a shout out to our friends Toby, Lucky, and Charles at the Now in Session podcast. These are three old friends coming back together to explore important topics, interview some incredible guests, talk about life and the Lao community. If you enjoy our show and like listening to podcasts, check out their show. They're on YouTube, Spotify, and give their IG a follow. So with that, we are now in session. Today's guest comes to us from Texas, and a big shout out to all of our fans out there in Texas. Texas is one of the largest states as far as listeners go to this podcast. So welcome everybody from Texas, and welcome Arik, who reigns from the DFW area. So we have Arik Suvana today, and Arik is a precision rifle shooter and also an avid hunter from what we understand. So we had a lot of great feedback when we covered some, let's call it, I'd say non-traditional sports, you know, the things like disc golf, cornhole, pickleball. People really like those episodes. So we wanted to bring Arik on to talk about the sports that he's in. So Arik, welcome to the show. We'd like to go ahead and start at the beginning. Tell us a little bit about, tell us who you are, and tell us about, go all the way back to your family coming from Laos and what you know about that.
Okay. Well, my name's Arik Suvana, I'm from Fort Worth, Texas. I shoot a little bit of precision rifle, and I don't know too much about my family history. My mom was from Vientiane, and my father was from Takak, yeah. And they came here after the war in Laos, and met in San Diego. And a few years later, moved to Texas, and that's where we all reside now, my whole family. So,
okay. So you were born in the States, huh?
Yeah, I was born here, yeah. Okay. Cool. 84, so...
What year did your parents come over?
I want to say like 73, maybe. 76.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah. Well, good. So you grew up in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Tell us a little bit about just what you did growing up and so forth.
Yeah. I mean, just the basic childhood. We didn't have very much. There's a small community out here in Saginaw, Texas, and that's where I grew up, and we have a temple there and like maybe five or six streets, and they're all, you know, the Laos community. And my whole father's side of the family lives on one street. There's like eight houses on that street.
Oh wow.
And yeah, it's pretty cool. So I mean, when we
Wait, what's the name of the street? What's the name of the street? Bob Is it LA Ocean name? Huh?
Bob Hanger. No, it's not.
It's not LA Ocean name?
No. But yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean, you know, we eat, we have get togethers, and the family all comes and, you know, walk across the street, and it's pretty cool.
So Saginaw is kind of known for a famous Lao New Year, right? One of the biggest in the country.
Yeah, so we do a real big Lao New Year every year, and we host a big party, and we probably have 500-600 members in our group. And I mean, all together, it's, man, I want to say five, maybe more than 10,000 maybe people come on Lao New Year's. Wow. And it's 3 days of partying and drinking and, you know, a bunch of celebrations and, you know, a bunch of traditional things like, you know, just a bunch of stuff. It's amazing. So.
Well, that's great. Well, then tell us a little bit. You're into some pretty cool stuff. And I know hunting and stuff is very popular in Texas. But tell us, how'd you get into hunting and shooting?
Okay, so hunting, I just recently started about a year ago. But I started shooting in 2019, and that kind of progressed and led to hunting. A lot of the people in the shooting community, they went from hunting and they wanted to shoot further, and then they started doing the precision rifle. But it's the other way around for me. So
yeah, you went other way.
But yeah. So I've only been hunting for a year, but I've done a few hunts, and it's pretty, you know, I enjoy it. Yeah. So.
Wow. So you started in 2019. Did you have, when you were younger, did you have like visions of hunting, of shooting, or did just 2019 come along and says, "Hey man, this is what I want to do." How did that all happen?
Okay. So when I was younger, probably like teens, I was interested into guns, not really shooting long range or anything like that. Just, it fascinated me, you know? Mm-hmm. And when I got old enough, I bought my first gun and I went to the range, tried it out. And, you know, I enjoyed it. And my buddy, he lived not too far from here, but, he owned a gun store, and, I'd go up there all the time, and he took me out one time to shoot a long range rifle for the first time. So this was in 2018. I never shot past, you know, 100 yards. And I went out there and I shot something at 1,000 yards first time. And I used this gun and I was amazed. I was like, wow, you can hit a target at 1,000 yards, you know, multiple times, like consistently. So I was like, okay, I want to learn this. I thought it was cool. So
that's cool. That's cool.
Yeah.
Wow.
And
well, so tell us a little bit. I mean, we don't quite understand the sport. You know, what is competitive shooting? How does it work? How do you score points? How do you kind of move up the ranks?
Okay, so I'm in a league. It's called a Precision Rifle Series, and that's like the predominant long-range series in the U.S. And, well, they're spreading now, but that's what I'm doing in the U.S. And pretty much the pro series is a 2-day competition, and it's about 20 stages. You shoot about 200 rounds, and each impact that you make is 1 point. So typically, if you miss, you know, 20 points, then you only got if it's 200 rounds, you get 180 points for that match. And then you just stack it up against other shooters and stuff like that. But the way it works is you'll get typically like 2 minutes, and it's usually 10 rounds, and you'll engage like targets from 300 to 1200 yards. And they'll start the time, and then you start going, and you'll get down and you'll put your rifle down and engage targets. You know, usually it's like three, four, five positions. You'll shoot, 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 and then move, and then shoot, shoot, shoot. And hopefully be done before 2 minutes. But yeah,
let me ask you. You say it's a 2-day pro series. How do you qualify for that? How does one qualify? Does, you know, can anybody just sign up and register, or do you have to perform, let's say, at a lower level and work your way up?
So what they have 1-day series too. That's more localized in different regions. Yeah. But the 2-day series, it's you can anybody can qualify. That's what's pretty cool about it, because the first time I started, you know, I went my first 2-day match and I'm seeing all these really, really good guys that I've, you know, that I know that are freaking awesome, and I'm shooting alongside them, you know what I mean? And so I mean, I there's no qualifications, but you can see exactly where you stack up against, you know, the best.
But what when they call it a pro series, are they, so it's not, you don't have to be pro, I mean, how do you earn like pro status, I guess would be
okay. So they have different tiers, and they go by percentage. So like at the end of the year, they'll go by what your percentage of shooting is, and or match wins. And I think the top 20% is considered pros, and then the next 10% is considered a semi-pro, and the next 10% is what is it, marksman, I think. Okay. And then everything below that is amateur.
Gotcha.
So I think last year I was considered a pro. So
nice. And, so you moved up. You're very talented to go in, yeah. And you know, I mean, for being like 3 years, well 4 years, right?
4 years. Yeah.
4 years. Yeah. Man, that's cool.
Yeah.
Some people take a lifetime and never get there. I'm not laughing, but I'm just like, you know, just laughing at the situation, not at individuals, not getting, you know, professional. But man, you know, hey man, there's skill, there's skill, there's hard work, there's genetics, you know, so all that has to be taken into
account. It takes a lot of hard work and dedication, that's for sure. And money and time.
You know, and skill, you know, your talents. You know, you can't overlook that. Talents, some people got it, you know, some people can get in there and do it. And other people like me, I couldn't shoot. I got no aim, man. I couldn't even do good in darts, man. So
I don't have that. Like, I don't know if it's manual dexterity or the hand eye or something, but yeah. I'm a horrible shot as well.
Exactly. The hand eye coordination type. Yeah.
Yeah.
It takes practice. I mean, yeah.
So tell us about some of that. Well, so you've done the pro series and some, I assume, some local events too. What was your proudest moment, maybe?
Man, my best placement was at a pro series match, and I got a sixth place out of, I don't know, maybe 110 shooters or something like that.
All right.
And that was a good accomplishment for me. I was really proud. That was my first trophy, and that was last year. And, was it the year before? Yeah, it was the year before. So, and that was one of my good moments. And another one is I shot production last year in a production class, and I took top production in the central region, which is Texas, Oklahoma, and Kansas. So I ended up first place in that category.
All right. And
that was pretty nice.
What is production? I don't know.
So production is a class under, so we have open class, and then you have other classes below it. And production is pretty much a rifle that's built, that's a production rifle, not a custom rifle.
I see.
So custom rifles are going to be gunsmith, you know, like every detail and everything in that rifle is going to be custom. So
it's kind of like stock cars and that's pretty cool then. Well, so where do you hope to take this sport? What are your goals in competitive shooting?
In competitive shooting, man, I just want to keep at it. You know, I'd like to win a match one day, you know, that'll be my ultimate goal. But, you know, for 2023 is, going to the finale with a really good score to put myself in a position to win a bullet. A bullet is it's like a top 10. They give the top 10 shooters for the whole season a trophy. It's a bullet. And that'll be a great goal for me. But yeah.
Always a goal. Always, yeah. I mean, that's what I was going to ask. Like, how far do you see yourself, like, from winning a major event? Do you see it happening, like, in the near future, or do you think it's going to take some time? Or
Man, I feel like I could do it this year. I feel like it's a lot of competition out there, and it's tough, but man, I feel like I can do
Yeah, well, you gotta have that mentality, man. Champions,
it.
that mentality. You gotta believe in yourself, right?
Yeah.
That's great. That's great.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Well, I know you haven't been hunting that long, but Ko and I were kind of enamored by some of the hunting videos you had on your IG and stuff.
Oh yeah.
It looked like some really cool hunts. So tell us about some of the adventures you had there so far.
Man, I've only been hunting for about a year, but I've done let's see, one, I don't know, maybe 12 hunts now, and some are successful and some weren't. But I guess it's a learning process. But I think my favorite hunt has to be Hawaii. So I went out there with the family. I had a vacation out there, me and my buddy, and we actually own a food truck together, and we grew up together. We're best friends, and his kid's named after me, and my kid's named after him. So it's a whole thing. But yeah, we took our families out there, and I think we stayed out there for a week. And me and him decided to take one day out to go hunting, and we booked a flight to Maui. We flew out there across the island, the big island, to Maui, and man, that view is just it's it was amazing. On one side of the mount, or on one side of the to your left, you'll see like a whole mountainside, and then to the right, you'll see a beautiful ocean. And it's just, yeah, the view was amazing, and the weather was great. It was nice.
So what do you
So
hunt in Hawaii? What are the animals there that?
they have a few different animals. They have some axis deer, and they have pigs, and they have goats. So we were actually on a goat hunt, and we're pretty much, up and down these hills and trying to find these goats, and you'd spot them, and then you try to go get close enough to them, and they'd run away, and you continue doing it. We probably hiked a few miles, and finally got into a position where we can get a few, and ended up being a real successful trip. Both of us took down two goats, so a goat each.
Yeah, and I believe you have a video on your IG about that. Yeah, I've been to Hawaii. The goats are kind of almost out of control in some areas. They're not native, they're feral, right? So,
There's a lot. Yeah.
yeah, so there's a lot.
They
So, I mean, go ahead, Eric.
roll in like big packs, and then so once you find them, it's not hard. You just gotta get close enough to them.
Yeah.
So what happens to the goat? Like, is it like deer hunting where people save the meat and process the meat, or because it's in Hawaii, you gotta let it go, or
Yeah.
how?
So, we're Laos, right? And Laos people, we eat everything, bro. Like, we're
That's why
Asian.
I asked. That's why I
So
asked.
yeah, after we shot the goats, he asked us, do you want to keep the meat? And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
So, we cleaned it up, took all the meat, and he vacuum sealed it, and froze it and shipped it back home to us.
Oh man, that's cool.
So
But
yeah.
have
The
you had it
family
yet?
enjoyed it. Yeah,
Okay.
it's good, man. We made some tacos, and then we made some. I gave it to my mom, and it was last New Year's, and they ended up, man, they took a lot of the meat and made a beef jerky or jerky out of it.
Okay.
Goat
Yeah,
jerky, yeah.
goat jerky, and the whole family was enjoying that. And I made some curry. That was
Okay,
pretty good.
now being Laotian, like I've had beef jerky, right? How would you, I don't know, characterize the, like the goat jerky? Like how is it very similar? Is it different, the taste?
The flavor for the
Yeah.
jerky was very similar. The
Okay.
texture, it's a little tough. There's not much fat, so I mean
Yeah.
it was, but it was good. I mean,
Yeah.
everybody ate it. The whole tray was gone. Like, and then nobody knew it was goat meat until after.
Oh,
Yeah, they don't care. They don't care. Goat's good.
because we
They
had
do. Yeah.
we had a whole buffet tray line, and the meat's there, and then you just walk by and grab it, and then yeah. So I mean,
So
there's no label that says
it
it's
looked just
goat.
like beef. It looked just like beef jerky. Then nobody knew the difference, right?
Yeah, it did.
Yeah.
It did. Yeah. So.
Well, it's funny. I asked that, man. 'Cause I remember growing up as a kid, first coming to America, and I'd see like guys fishing, right? And especially like Westerners, like Americans, and like they catch it and then they throw it back. I'm like, What's that guy doing, man? You just got him. You threw it back. I didn't understand, like, I didn't understand that it was a sport. I didn't understand that, you know, there's rules and all that. I was like, oh, okay, because we eat for survival, right? I mean, it's about surviving back in Laos. So
I'll tell you a funny story of when my in-laws came and my wife was a child. They came to Texas or Amarillo. And they had a friend coming in from Dumas, Texas, which is, I think, like an hour up the panhandle from Amarillo, who hit a deer on the way to their house coming over to visit. So they had been, this was maybe 1981. They'd been in the country like a year or something. So the guy throws the deer in the back of his truck, brings it to my wife's house. Her dad worked in the slaughterhouse. He's a butcher. So they're like, hey, they butcher the thing up. They're grilling it outside. They're packing the freezer. All of a sudden, they get a knock on the door. It's the game warden. One of the next door neighbors looks over the fence and says, hey, you guys, these guys got a deer out of season. So they come in, they take it all, they sight them, and they're saying, they couldn't understand. They said, so we're supposed to let it rot in the street, right? Yeah. It doesn't make any sense. We were like hungry in Laos. I mean, people are starving other places, and you're supposed to let this rot in the street. This is a funny story when they first came.
It's so true. You know, that's how the mentality is of, our people, because, they came from nothing.
Yeah.
Had to restart their whole life, everything, so.
Yeah.
It's surviving, I mean, I remember this, I remember people accusing us of this and that. I mean, I just, back in the day, it was like, you guys eat dog and stuff. It's like, now that I didn't go for it. Like, man, we didn't steal your pet or anything, we ain't.
Yeah.
That. No,
yeah.
that was, those,
stereotypes and all that.
But with you doing hunting, any ideas on any plans on like maybe doing something like a safari type hunt? Is that something that you would be open to?
Man, I'd love to do something like that, but it's not in the books yet.
Okay.
I think for 2023 I have a couple of plans. I want to do an elk hunt in Colorado, and that's going to be fun. We're going to plan to stay out there maybe 2 weeks and stay out in the woods and hopefully find some elk. And then mule deer would be cool. I'd like to do a mule deer hunt. But man,
what type of
mule deer?
No,
they're like a bigger version of those ones that we have around here, Co.
Oh, okay,
yeah. A little bigger. Yeah,
they're cool. Well, Eric, hunting sometimes gets a bad rap by some people, but to be honest, a lot of the hunters I know are probably the biggest conservationists, because if you don't have land, if you don't have animals, you're not hunting. Yeah. And then also, like you with the goats, they're invasive. They're actually destroying the environment. They don't belong there. They're out of control. So tell us, how can people sustainably hunt and have a positive impact on wildlife?
Man, I would say that I know a lot of hunters and fishermen and everything that we do is run by the states and the government, and they tax you. Like, for each animal that you take, you have to pay for a tag or a license and fees. And I'm pretty sure that a lot of that, maybe 100% of that, goes back into the conservation of these animals and the lands too, the state lands, the government lands and all that. It's being protected and funded by hunters, fishermen, outdoorsmen. And, without that money, and they probably wouldn't be able to do that. I mean, as fast as the U.S. is growing, and there's buildings and cement everywhere. And if those areas weren't protected, in 10, 20, 50 years from now, you might not have nothing, in the future, we know that they'll be there for our kids and our grandkids and, for everyone. And a lot of that money goes back into the, back into it. And that's how I feel about it, at least. I mean, and it's a natural thing, so.
Yeah, for sure.
I got a question going back to competition, right? Do you see like other Laotians or Asians getting involved with precision shooting, or would you consider like are you like one of the only Asians in the group shooting?
I would definitely say we are a minority in the group. There's not very many. There are a few, and there are some really good, and you know, I'd probably say I can count the number of Asians that shoot that are at a, you know, pretty good level, high level, is going to be probably, I can count them all on one hand, you know, in the US. So, but yeah, there's not very many. And it's, I don't think there's any, maybe a couple Laos. Yeah.
And the organization is pretty welcoming.
Yeah. Everybody's welcoming, man. It's amazing. How, the community and the precision rifle, they're just, you know, they're willing to help you in any way. You know, your equipment goes down, they're willing to lend you equipment. You know, my very first match, my buddy took me to, and I didn't know what I was doing. I brought a gun that wasn't really made for precision rifle. It was an AR-15, and I'm sitting there shooting an AR-15 at a competition, and I can't hit nothing. I think the very first stage, I got 3 shots off out of 12, and I missed all 3. And then, anyways, so that gun ends up jamming, and a bullet gets stuck in the chamber, and I can't do anything. And I'm 2 stages in, and I'm like, okay, well, I guess that's my match. You know, I'm not gonna finish shooting. And one of the guys come up to me and says, "I got a spare rifle and some ammo. If you want to shoot, you know, you can shoot my rifle." And I'm like, "Are you serious? Like, you're gonna let me use your custom gun? It's like $10,000 rifle." And he's like, "Yeah, bro, check it out." And I'm like, "Okay." So I finished the match, and I paid him for the ammo. He didn't want to take my money, but I paid him for it. And I was hooked since then, man. Like, I went home. I had my tail tucked in because I sucked bad. But that's what, you know, drove me to really want to pursue it more. And
That's another question I wanted to ask you, because you mentioned, you know, that there's a lot of money, you know, involved in this sport. Like, you know, yeah, what is your average rifle cost? Does it cost to compete? What's ammunition? Like, tell me some of the expenses.
So I would say to get started, you know, you probably a minimum of maybe $3,000 for a rifle.
A rifle,
but okay. It can go up to 10, you know. Just, you know, it just depends on how custom, how much, you know, money you want to spend. And, you know, that's just the basics. And then match fees and all that. Every time that I travel for a pro match, it's like, altogether, I'm probably spending like $1,000 on hotel and food.
Oh, you got to pay for your own travel, huh?
Yeah. So a lot of the sport, there's no like real sponsor. There's no real money being made. You know what I mean? People do it because they love it. You know, and that's their passion. And that's me. You know, I spend a lot of my time and money into it, but, you know, I wouldn't trade it for the world, you know. So, but yeah, it gets expensive. So a lot of stuff gets, ammo right now is pretty expensive. So we had the shortage whenever Biden took office, and people were just buying up all the components and ammo. And it drove, huh?
How much are you spending on ammo, let's say, for a competition? How much would you spend on ammo?
So for one match is usually 200 rounds. And then you probably want to take another 100 rounds so you can make sure your rifle's shooting well. And then just in case you have any hiccups or anything like that. So if you're looking at 300 rounds, you know, maybe 250, it's, man, I want to say like $500.
Okay.
On ammo.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, just on ammo.
It's I think it's like $2 a round right now.
$2 a round, yeah, man, that's crazy.
Yeah, but I'm not really sure because I make all my own ammo, so I don't really count it like that. You know what I mean?
Tell us about that. Tell us about how you make your own ammo.
So once you start shooting and you really get into it, you really want to make your own ammo. It's suited for your rifle. You know what I mean? So it can shoot, you know, to its full potential. If you just buy box ammo from the store, it's like a, you know, it's all the same ammo, and then whenever you throw it in your rifle, it might shoot well, it might not, you know.
But can you tell us the process?
So we take the brass, and then I have all different kind of equipment right here. This is a press. I don't know if you can see that, but
okay,
this is a press right here.
Yeah,
and, yeah, pretty much. And then I have a powder throw on this side, which
okay.
They'll throw the powder for me, and I'll take the brass, and we'll prep the brass and all that. Then once it's ready, we'll put powder or put a primer in it. We'll put powder to the, you know, exact amount of powder every time, and then we'll put it on the press and put a bullet on there, and then seat it and and we'll be ready to go. It's a lot more complicated than that.
Yeah, just
the basics of it.
Are there any safety precautions? I mean, dealing with the gunpowder, or is
it's fairly stable. If you take gunpowder and you burn it, it's not going to explode. Like, I can dump out a whole bunch, it's just going to burn. But if you confine it into like a chamber, that's when it'll blow. So, but yeah, I mean, a couple other precautions is with primers. When you're seating primers, you got to be careful, and there's different ways of doing that.
But, yeah. So if by making it instead of buying it, $2 or so to buy it off the shelf, how much do you say? Maybe 50% or so? Half the price? Man. Hard to tell, I know, because you buy in bulk.
It sounds like you save money, but to get started, it can be fairly expensive.
Okay.
If you want to start on the low end, you could probably start reloading for, pretty cheap, Yeah. But it's going to cost a lot of time, and it's going to take you a lot of time. But with the equipment that I have, it makes it really fast and quick, which, it saves me a lot of time because I'm shooting a lot. But yeah. The price gets up there, So I've probably spent, thousands. I don't even want to say the number. Yeah, my wife might hear this podcast. But
how many bullets can you make, let's say, in an hour?
For a match, let's just say for a match, right? Yeah. 300 rounds. I'd probably, it take me when I get off work, I'll probably spend 3 hours in the garage.
Okay.
And for 3 nights.
Okay.
Wow, so 9 hours. We're talking about 9 hours.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. About total of maybe a little bit less, but yeah, I would say around 9 hours. But if I can get everything prepped, just physically loading it, I can do it in a couple hours. So.
Okay. Interesting.
But I break it down into steps, and it's a lot of ammo to load. And I probably loaded like 6,000-7,000 rounds last year. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. The year before that, I loaded even more than that. I shot just in matches alone, I probably shot like 6,000 rounds, but I probably did like 8 to 10.
Wow. 8 to 10,000. Shooting 6,000 in matches, that's a lot of ammo.
That's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. We didn't want to say that because your wife might listen to this, but
your food truck must be doing good, man, huh?
Yeah, it's doing pretty good.
Tell us about the food truck.
So I got a buddy, we grew up together, and we're best friends, and when his wife got pregnant, at that time my girlfriend had gotten pregnant, like around the same time. He's like, bro, remember when we were younger, we said we're going to name our kids after each other? But he had his kid first, right? And he told me this while we were in the hospital. And then he goes, I named my kid after you. And I was like, he's like, you got to name your kid. I was like, wait, hold on. I never said that. He's like, yeah, you did. It's too late. I already named him. And yeah, we ended up naming our kids after each other. And he was my best man at my wedding. And so he's been in the restaurant business a long time. And he really wanted to break out and do his own thing. And at that time I was, I had some money saved, and he was, he was asking our friends and family, hey, is anybody interested in being partners? And so I ended up, getting involved with that. Man, it was a great decision, So it's doing well. And it's with my good friend. And
what type of food, like Lao food?
It's actually hibachi. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's really good. It's located in a college town, not too far from here, Denton.
Oh, okay, so, University of North Texas, right?
Yeah. So,
who does the cooking?
My buddy, he did it for a few years, and now he's gotten to the point where he's able to hire some help and take a little bit of time off, and we've been doing a lot of hunts together. And
nice.
So is it mobile? Do you bring it around to other places, pop-up events, things like that, or is it pretty much just stay there?
It stays there, yeah.
Okay.
We got a good location that does really well. And, it's actually in the parking lot of a bar.
Oh, okay.
So outside the bar, they hang out and drink, and they have games, and we stay open till like 2 a.m. So
yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, I mean, that's they don't got to go far to get food. You know, I mean, people walk out of the bar and they're just thinking food. So
yeah, get the munchies and hanging out. So
yeah, that's true. But we'd love to see it pull up the Launier in Saginaw one day. I don't know. Well, that's cool. So what's the
idea?
What's the name of the truck? We want to give it a little shout out on the show here.
So the name of the truck is called the Saucy Hibachi, and we're right behind the East Side Bar in Denton. And if you guys ever out this way, holla at me. I'll take you guys out there.
Yeah, for sure.
I was out in Dallas a while back for a bodybuilding competition, but that was years ago. So
okay,
I didn't get to see much of the town. I just saw the hotel and the venue. So.
Yeah, I feel you. When I go on these shooting competitions, it's the same way. I see nothing but trees and woods and country, because it's usually not in the city, because you know it's far out. And that's pretty much all I see.
Like what locations are there? You mentioned Hawaii. You mentioned Colorado. Where else have you gone for your competitions?
So for competitions, those are for the hunts, but for competitions, so I've been, North Carolina, I go to Tennessee a lot. There's a big, big complex out there. Okay. And I think I probably went 3 times this year. And that's where the central of the PRS is. And it's in Finger, Tennessee, and then Oklahoma, Kansas, New Mexico, Colorado. I mean, they're everywhere, but I try to go where I can drive. Mm. I don't like to fly too much, but I've flown a few times. I went to Wyoming and I flew out there, and I flew out to North Carolina. I flew to Tennessee before. And, I try not to, it saves you a little bit on money. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then you can bring all your stuff, right? So if you're flying, it's expensive and you have to pay more for big bags and all this equipment and gear.
So to check bullets and guns into a plane, is that a big issue, or is it, they have a good process?
It's not a big issue, but you need to know what you're doing. You know, you need to research it. Once you know what you're doing, it's fairly simple. You know, you have to set up your rifle case in a certain way and your ammo a certain way. And when you go there, you just let them know, hey, I got a gun. They usually want to open it, check it, and then they'll check you in. And then if they have any issues, like after they brought it back, they'll give you a call, like if they need to open the case or you know, have any questions and stuff like that. But you just got to be careful. As long as you know what you're doing and you do it the way they want you to do it, you know, then you're golden.
Interesting. I get enough stress flying myself through customs, man. Just
the first time when
I can imagine carrying a gun through going through customs or
pretty nervous.
Yeah. Or to the airport.
It's pretty normal for me now. So I carry my pistol everywhere, and if I can bring it to a state, I'll lock it up and bring my pistol with me, you know. So I mean, it's a pretty simple process once you learn it. So
So, Ark, you know, I watch the Olympics and I see a lot of shooting events there. Is this a similar style, or tell us a little bit about the Olympic shooting and what you know about it?
So Olympic shooting is going to be a little bit different. And it's, you know, right now the type of shooting that we're doing is practical precision rifle shooting. And it's very, very young. So I think it started maybe in 2012. And for a sport, that's, you know, very, very young. And it's been growing since. And honestly, I don't know if it were to ever become in the Olympics, that'd be awesome. Right now they have a world competition. I think they hold it every 2 years, and it just started. The first one was this year, or 2022. And who knows where it'll go from there, but yeah, it's still a young sport and everybody's still learning, and it's pretty cool.
You could be a trailblazer, man, for Laotians, you know, like you get more Laotians involved, get them shooting, and then you're the pioneer, you know?
Yeah. So, if anybody wants to shoot and they're, you know, if you think you want to shoot and you're in this area, even if you're not in Texas area, I'll come to you. If there's a match in your area, we can go shoot together, you know?
Man, your DMs might blow up after you say that, you know, you might get people messaging you on IG, so.
Right. I might regret that one.
Yeah, for sure. But. Well, that's good. Well, just one last question I have. If somebody wants to get into competitive shooting, what advice would you have for them other than write a big check?
I would say just get out there and shoot, you know, find out if you like it. You don't even need to buy equipment. So a lot of these matches, they have what they call loaner guns and ammo. So, like, if you are interested, you know, you call them up and, you know, find them on social media. Hey, I'm interested in shooting. They have guns you can borrow, and you don't have to spend money to buy it. You just pay for the ammo and try it out, see if you like it. And you get to see what other people are using and, you know, and all that. And yeah, just get out there and try it. That's it. That's the number one. And if you're ever in Texas,
I got one question, John. I was like, who does your, I like your IG videos, bro. Like who does that? I don't know. Cool, man. I was like, it's really like.
So I sat there, I learned how to do it myself, kind of,
nice.
You know,
nice.
YouTube and stuff like that. But I just try to make it look pretty cool and interesting. You know,
it is, man. That's what I noticed when I went to visit your page, man. It's really cool videos, man.
Yeah, I have a YouTube, but that one's mainly for family. So okay. if you end up pulling on my YouTube, you'll see a bunch of family, like family videos and vacations and stuff like that. But I've never really like got into social media, but just if I want to be more known, I need to, you know, start doing social media and stuff and be more active. So that's why I started posting more and learning how to make some videos, basic videos and stuff like that. And I use my phone. So I told myself I'm not going to buy any expensive equipment for that. It's just a hobby, having a good time, you know, posting some cool stuff. But
I mean, you're already spending enough on guns, man. You don't need to spend any more on, like, you know, cameras and all that fancy orders and stuff, man. So,
yeah.
Well, good. Well, everybody can follow you on IG, Eric Suvana, and it's Eric with an A. That's why I accidentally called you Ark at the beginning. But it's Eric with an A on IG. You guys could follow him, check out some of these cool shooting and hunting videos. So with that, well, Co, anything else for Eric before we wrap up here?
Nah, it's been a great interview, and I'm really happy you came on tonight. So great having you as a guest.
Yeah. Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah, and listeners, if you're in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, particularly north of there in Denton, be sure to check out the Saucy Hibachi food truck in that area, right? Best hibachi, especially if you're want to hang out at a late night college bar or something like that, right? It's the way to go. So thanks so much for coming on, Eric. Great interview.
All right, thank you.
All right, see you later, everybody. Have a good one.
The C4 podcast is brought to you by the Lao American Sports Hall of Fame. Visit us on the web at laoamericansports.com, celebrating the first, inspiring the next.